Episode 142 of the Deep Dudes Podcast, recorded July 27th, 2017. Ghosts
of the Past.
That was so in sync. TV Dudes, I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Kyle.
We're just jumping right into it. We're just introducing ourselves without bullshitting.
Sometimes I like getting the introduction out of the way so I can just like check that off of my list of an outline.
I like to make people wonder, like, who's the guy saying crazy shit? Which one of them is it?
It's all of us.
Yeah, fair enough. Every time we start a show, even though we don't hear the theme song in the studio, like I know on the recording they hear it, so in my head I hear it, so we're dead silent, and I'm just like, jamming out to it.
You know what's weird? I hear the theme song from Magnum P.I. in my head. Don't know why, just every time.
Oh, every time no, we... you're crazy. You know, our theme song, I don't think we talk about this too often, but our theme song and our break music's all by our buddy Greg, our original TV dude.
Yes, the OG.
Yeah, he made all
TV.
That. And I kept OGB. Telling him, he needs to put it up on like iTunes or something or somewhere where people could buy it.
I agree. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
That'd be cool if we put up the TV Dudes theme as like royalty free and like see how many people rip it off, like how many podcasts start to have the same theme song as us.
Yeah, or they just take it and they make iterations of it and send it back to us.
That would be pretty cool.
I want a reggae version.
I want to be out in public when someone's ringtone is the TV Dudes.
Oh my God.
No lie. I know she doesn't listen to the podcast, so we're good. So my roommate's in a band, and she changed her ringtone to one of the band's songs. So now I constantly hear this little sound bite, which it's pretty catchy, but that was like 20 phone calls ago. So now it's kind of annoying. So
it's all changed.
So I'm going to ask a question. I feel like the answer is probably no. Are you guys familiar with the Viking Fence commercials?
No. What's a commercial?
No. Okay.
I don't have Fair to enough. Deal with Fair commercials enough. Anymore.
Okay. It's an old commercial. It has this little that it starts out with, and my staffer's boyfriend, her ringtone is that thing. I haven't seen this commercial in 25 years probably, but every time she gets a text from her boyfriend, I flash this stupid local commercial about a Viking fence. Yeah, see?
Are you sure it's not?
That's different.
That's our buddy Martin's ringtone. Every time he gets a call, I'm like, this is the best. It does not grow old. All right, guys. Like I said, we are the TV Dudes, and we're talking about the ghosts of the past. Randy, explain this because you came up with the name.
All right. So the deal is we're talking about things with a past effect. So there's in Game of Thrones this week, no spoilers, but the past is definitely coming back to haunt some of our characters.
Mm-hmm.
Insecure, mm-hmm. We're all talking about the past, the ghost of what happened at the end of the last episode.
Ghosts of relationships past.
Exactly. Ooh. And Ozark is all about your past coming back to haunt you.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we get into all of that, guys, there's a couple ways you guys can support us. Of course, you can always go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. We'll read that here on the show. You can also go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. Make a per episode pledge. Give us a dollar an episode. You only get charged if we release an episode. It's kind of a great deal in that way. And in exchange, you get bonus exclusive content, which is in the form usually of podcasts, little 30-minute episodes that we'll do discussing anything that doesn't fall under the umbrella of television. I think this week we're going to talk about Comic-Con news that's not TV related.
Yes, San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah. Nobody's talking about that on the internet.
But you get our perspective, which if you guys like us, that's cool, I guess.
Yeah, if you're paying for it, it's got to be good, right? That's just basic economics.
Top notch. Anyway, we got a couple new patrons this month. We want to thank Jonathan Haftemichael. Dude, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Awesome. And Justin Rainey, thank you.
Yes, thanks.
You guys are beautiful, beautiful people.
We appreciate the Patreons.
We do.
And I believe there's a third way you can support us.
That's correct. There is a third way.
And I believe it has something to do with ringtones.
You've just embraced it now. I like this.
I'm drifting into it.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not just ringtones. Ringtones is nice. But I was thinking about this. I've been listening to Pod Save America. And they're always talking about how they're on like Spotify.
This is a political podcast?
It's a political podcast.
America?
Yes.
I haven't heard of it. Is it on the top of the charts all the time?
It is on the top of the charts. It does not beat out – you didn't beat out Serial, which you might have heard about on that podcast. They were very upset about
it. I've heard good things of the Serial, yeah.
At any rate, I guess they and some of their podcasts are now on Spotify. And there's so many ways to get podcasts. Now there's like – there's Stitcher. There's Spotify. There's iTunes. But I was thinking like – all the music services, Napster, Spotify, there's another streaming music service I'm forgetting. But
is Google Music?
Is Grooveshark still around?
Grooveshark? But Google Music is the exception to my rule because the rule I've come up with, none of them sound like music services. Like what is Spotify? Spotify is just made up. Napster, made up. Grooveshark, a little musical. But at any rate, I think the TV dudes need their own streaming channel. And I think our fans need to name a streaming channel that has nothing to do with television or podcasts.
Yeah.
Like Bippity. Bippity is a good one. Just nonsense words.
Gloobyarb.
Gloobyarb.
Yeah. Or it could be like MovieCast, the TV podcast.
So that's your other way you can help us out is to name and create a streaming service that only streams the TV dudes.
That's a fucking weird one, Randy. That's a weird way to support us this month.
That's the weirdest thing I've come up with, really?
I mean, it's no butter sculpture, but it's got to be up there.
Someone out there needs to rank these. I really would like that.
I really want a butter sculpture, though, now.
I can't wait to see our app.
Oh, my God. The server should be called Butter Sculpture.
Butter Sculpture.
The only streaming place to get the TV dudes is on buttersculpture.com.
Are we the only podcast?
We're the only podcast on it. It's streaming. It streams TV dudes 24 hours in random order. Listen, you tune in, and there's TV dudes playing.
Amazing. Amazing. Hey, guys, if you like listening to us talk about TV and you want more TV podcasts to listen to, we're part of a network called the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
I stuttered a little there, and you guys were still on point. I love it.
We should have stuttered in our delivery.
That's true.
Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
But then it's like we're beatboxing.
Permanent Record.
Okay, it's kind of cool, I guess. Anyway, you can go there and check out a slew of shows that are all part of our little network that all talk about different shows, different TV, different avenues of TV, and this month we're promoting Gilmored, which our buddies Mike and Key dedicate to talking about this show called Gilmore Girls. Do I have that right?
I'm familiar with it.
It has something to do with autumn leaves and coffee shops.
Yeah, and being more popular than almost anything we talk about.
Yes.
I thought the Gilmore Girls were anthropomorphic animated fish.
No, that's the Moore Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
Moore Gil.
It's theories that they talk about on this podcast.
Yeah.
And if you guys want to listen to Morgill, go to buttersculptures.com.
Buttersculpture.com.
Yeah, in between TV Dudes episodes, the Morgill girls streams.
Permanentrecord.com/Gilmored.
Permanentrecord.com/Gilmored.
Gilmored.
Nice guy. All right, let's jump over to our listener questions. They've had to deal with enough of our shenanigans here.
Yeah, it's just going to get way better.
Shenanigans tonight.
And you know who gets our first question?
Who's that?
If you guys like us on Facebook, by the way, facebook.com/TV Dudes, you guys can ask us questions too. But our recent patron, Jonathan Haptemichael, he gets our first question. He says, "Hi, dudes. A college friend watched Breaking Bad for the first time and regularly posted her opinions on Facebook. Her number one criticism, besides Walter White," how does one criticize Walter White? He is the show.
Maybe he's too evil. Is that a criticism?
He's too Walter. Too
anyway, besides Walter White, her number one criticism was the lack of shock in the twists. As an acolyte of Shonda Rhimes' shows, the big twists in Breaking Bad were all old hat for her. What popular shows of the past have you watched years after they finished that didn't resonate with you much or at all?
First of all, your friend is wrong about Breaking Bad. I just want to say that right off the bat.
Yeah, that's
wrong.
Crazy talk.
That's crazy talk. But the shows, I actually, this is going to get me in trouble. I felt this way about Twin Peaks. When I went to watch Twin Peaks, I was like, this is weird and it's sort of its time. And it was not doing it for me.
Yeah. I also tried to go in and watch Twin Peaks, and I remember going, I don't know, this just isn't for me. And yet I could see all the elements of that that fed into later shows that were completely up my alley. So it's – but it feels dated.
Yeah, I've run into that where like an influence is really – you can see what you liked about it in the influence, but you've seen the like the processed version at this point, and so the influence is not as good.
I mean, this is going to be a little bit blasphemous as well to you, Randy, but I watch shows like Cheers, and they – with their laugh tracks and their style of humor, it also feels like such a product of its time. Like you always talk about news radio, Spin City, any of these kind of Suddenly Susan whatever shows.
Okay, wait a minute.
I'm putting it in the same
wait a
can.
Minute. No.
Caroline in the City.
No. No. No.
Okay, but nevertheless, I just – I watch the Cheers or whatever, and it's hard. It's just so hard to –
It's hard to hear human laughter.
It is. And to see characters stop and wait a bit before they're allowed to talk again or have people pause so that they – like or not laugh at jokes. Like they're not laughing because the audience is laughing and therefore they can't also laugh at something.
Oh,
It's a part of a multicam sitcom with an audience that kind of drives me bonkers now.
I can see that. It doesn't bother me on shows that I love, but like, say, Sports Night. Sports Night's laugh track. I still love Sports Night, but it definitely is jarring. So I get that. I do get it.
I love the videos where they take out the laugh track and you watch like all these people are saying hilarious things and no one's laughing.
The Big Bang, Theory is way better without a laugh track. it's like surrealist horror at that point.
Well, you know, speaking of like things that are dated or like the laugh track, I always go back. My classic answer for this is Johnny Quest, because when I was younger, loved Johnny Quest. And then you watch it when you're an adult and you're like, wait, it's one panel and nothing's moving but their lips.
Yeah.
Like you're like, I was literally staring at just like single frames, like, and my imagination was doing the rest.
I had the same thing because I went back and watched the X-Men cartoon from the 90s and Spider-Man.
Mistake.
And I didn't realize how – like I was very accepting of shit animation back then.
Uh-huh.
But I got pretty high and watched it one time.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so bad and it's never ending.
Yeah. The thing about those cartoons, the spine of them is the Claremont X-Men and then the 90s X-Men and the like – classic Spider-Man and the 90s Spider-Man. So it's like the source material was so good.
Oh, yeah.
But the stories are all good.
Great.
And so and when you're a kid, you're not paying attention to how bad that animation is. And then when like something like Batman comes along, you're like, oh, right. That other stuff sucked.
Yeah. I can go back and watch Batman the Animated Series. It's great.
Oh, my God.
Zach McLernan says, in the darkest timeline, Justin Theroux has morphed into a four-armed warlord named Garmadon and is swarming over the globe in a three-season-long, bloody, yet oddly artistic and beautiful wave of pedantic, nonsensical destruction that will leave the world momentarily satisfied, but then ultimately wondering what just happened.
Is this HBO's next show?
It sounds fucking awesome. As he lays siege to Austin, he captures the TV dudes and states that he will destroy all the TV shows on Earth except one. The destroyed shows will all have copies destroyed, never able to be watched again. Your choices to save. These are a list of choices of what one show can save,
yep,
guys.
Okay, yep.
Game of Thrones, Mad Men, The Leftovers, The Sopranos, Lost, Mr. Robot, Rick and Morty, or two random episodes of Terriers.
Okay, wait.
Why? Roll the dice on those.
Why? I'm going to give...
They're not even back-to-back.
I'm going to give Zach the benefit of the doubt here, and he's saying that any two episodes of the Terriers is better than a whole season of an entirety of other shows.
Yeah, I think he wanted you to have to weigh the decision a little more heavily than if Terriers was just an option.
Real Sophie's choice over here.
Okay. First of all, Terriers would not have been my choice. So anyway, go on.
Our decision, us TV dudes, the decision must be unanimous or all shows are destroyed.
Oh, fuck. They're gone.
Who is saved and who do the TV dudes choose to survive? He says, also on a serious note, Justin Theroux is the villain in the next Lego movie.
Huh? Okay, sure.
The samurai one.
Justin Theroux writes stuff. I mean, he's a weird dude.
He wrote Iron Man.
He wrote Zoolander
and it was the breakdancing.
Justin Theroux wrote Iron Man?
He wrote Zoolander 2, which was a bad one. He wrote Iron Man 2.
He wrote something else that I saw recently. Yeah, he's done some writing.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay, anyway.
That doesn't mean he's safe.
So, guys, we need a system.
Does that the abs.
So, first of all, Terriers is out the door. I'm not saving two episodes of Terriers. I wouldn't save a whole season of Terriers if it was the only show on Earth, one season. It's you do the math, it doesn't make sense.
Can we just go ahead and get rid of Sopranos because I don't want to slog through that again?
Sopranos are out.
Done.
Okay.
Done.
Mr. Robot? Mike isn't here. Can we kill Mr. Robot?
I'd be down with getting rid of Mr. Robot.
Yeah, we can go ahead. We got some... Like, you'd never pick Mr. Robot over some of these other ones.
Right, all right. Exactly. Can we get a clarification, though?
Yes.
Like, as far as us,
yeah,
is our decision that ongoing shows like Game of Thrones, Mr. Robot, Rick and Morty, we would see them to a completion of a series?
We'd get the whole thing. Yes.
Okay.
So, I think that's fair. It's fair to
stipulate. Let's put that ground rule
so
down.
So the elusive episodes of Rick and Morty we would actually have.
We'd have,
we'd have three more seasons.
Three more seasons. Come on. It's Dan Harmon. We're going to get one or two.
You think?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no way we're getting three more seasons.
All right. All right.
Let's stipulate we've got four seasons of Rick and Morty.
Fair.
All right. All right. Mad Men, I think Mad Men's out the door. I like Mad Men. It's a classic, but I don't think it's one these other ones.
I would hold on to
keep
it
in? Okay.
So here's what it has. Lots of seasons. So it's like some of these other ones are shorter. Mad Men, we could really.
Same argument. Lost has a ton of episodes. Some of them aren't as good. Even Grant will admit it.
Like that Lost is staying around.
Lost is kind of like a cool magic trick, and then somebody shows you how the trick's done afterwards. Like, you never get to watch the card trick the same way again.
I agree. The only reason Lost is around is because I'm afraid that you'll reject it, and then we lose all the TV shows. But can we ditch Lost? Can we ditch Lost, Grant?
I have a very logical answer for which one we should pick.
Okay, go.
So I think the obvious choice is Rick and Morty. Because if we choose Rick and Morty, all of the references will constantly keep us updated, even if we only know the context of all of our other shows that we're missing out on.
That's an interesting point. However, I'm not willing to allow the only TV or show remaining on Earth to be an animated show. Sorry, I'm a snob.
What?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Because I was leaning a little bit more toward Rick and Morty, too.
Rick and Morty is not going to make it, guys.
You're going to destroy all television.
I am holding a gun to Rick and Morty's head. Yes.
Oh. I mean, are you just whittling this down to Game of Thrones?
I'm leaning that way, yeah.
Leftovers is gone.
Leftovers is probably gone.
Yeah. So we're left with Game of Thrones,
yep.
Mad Men, Lost, and Rick and Morty.
Yep.
And you are basically just saying Game of Thrones.
I'm saying Game of Thrones.
You're holding all of our TV hostage with Game of Thrones. Even though we've got a Rick and Morty consensus over
yep.
here.
You've got to convince me of Rick and Morty because now it's all going.
Listeners, you got your answer there. TV dudes would destroy all television not being able to decide.
Game of Thrones is pretty fantastic, but I don't know if I'd want to rewatch it. Rick and Morty, I can fucking rewatch.
Whoa.
Crazy.
Pause. Point. Let's go back to the legal disclaimer in this question. This is like Desert Island action?
Kind of, but it's more like this is destroying all of those shows' existence on Earth for everyone.
Okay.
And we're the arbiter.
Here's the thing. We're going to have to switch to Game of Thrones, okay? And I think you're going to have to agree here, too.
Okay.
Because if all shows were destroyed, would that also mean all pornography is destroyed?
Good point.
In which case... The little snippets in Game of Thrones. That's all we're going
to
have.
You can't jerk off to Rick and Morty. I mean, I guess someone probably has.
Is porn considered television?
I don't know. I guess we'll need a clarification on this.
That's what I was thinking. If it's a desert island.
All right, but.
You definitely got to bring Game of Thrones.
But here's where Kyle is brilliant. Because he's given us a reason to give two answers.
Okay.
The answer is, if porn is also eradicated, then you keep Game of Thrones. If porn is not eradicated, I will allow Rick and Morty to be the last remaining TV show.
We saved television.
Porn's got to be around.
Okay. All right.
Even if it's just crude coconut sculptures we make.
I would also like to point out that with this, all of these old shows are gone. But that doesn't mean that new shows can't be made.
Oh.
Including porn. Porn okay, with, so, porn's everlasting.
So new
porn's
shows new die. Shows are possible. Okay. All right. Well, that's different.
What is porn may never die, I believe is the same.
Carved into the pyramids.
I'm willing to get rid of Lost. I'm willing to dump Mad Men. It's really tough between the two because also in a world without those shows, I might want the levity of Rick and Morty to the heaviness of Game of Thrones.
Rick and Morty can get so dark.
Oh, but what if picking Rick and Morty means you don't get to see how Game of Thrones ends?
But Rick, man.
Uh-huh. See, I think it's Rick and Morty with an asterisk is what I think.
I mean, we could just wait for the books. All right, fine. I'll go with Game of Thrones with
and
you
And it
guys.
Does solve our porn problem.
All right. Good question, obviously. Fine, we're stuck with Game of Thrones. I'll unanimously agree with you guys. Let's do it. Benjamin Hamill says, are there any actors who are primarily known for TV that you wish would get wider recognition? For me, it's Walton Goggins. That's a great choice, by the way.
Yes, it is.
After his performance in The Shield, which still haunts me, and his turn as the incredibly charismatic Boyd Crowder, I want everyone to know his name. I'm glad he's starting to branch out. He was in the last Tarantino movie, with rumors that Tarantino's next movie is based on Charles Manson. How great would Goggins be as Manson?
He really would. I'm actually a big Tarantino fan. I'm not super into the notion of this Manson movie, but if it was Goggins, I'd be more interested.
And he's signed up for the new Lara Croft reboot as well. He's going to be an Ant-Man.
That's a weird choice for Lara Croft. I mean, it's a different approach.
You didn't see his rack in Sons of Anarchy, I guess.
I credit them with going a different direction.
He was pretty stacked in
Walton Goggins as the feminist Lara Croft is an interesting choice.
I would say I'm really always impressed with Sarah Paulson's performances on the American Crime, everything Ryan Murphy's doing.
Yeah.
She's pretty amazing.
OJ was pretty fantastic.
Michael Emerson from Lost and Persons of Interest.
Yeah.
It's another fantastic one. But I mean, I don't know. I kind of want them to stay on TV. I like where they get repeating roles they really get to dig into.
That's a good point is that,
I think TV is better.
I also think TV is better. If I had to give up TV or movies, I'd give up movies. But my answer is Carla Gugino, who has done some movies, but mostly indies or the occasional franchise picture. I loved her in Karen Sisko. I think she was really good in Wayward Pines. I really like Carla Gugino, and I feel like she should be someone who's getting more attention.
She's pretty fantastic.
She is. And she's somewhat well-known, but I think, Kyle didn't know who she was.
Well, but I remember now you're Entourage.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, off the top of your head, you weren't like, Carla Gugino, she's great.
Not a household name.
And she should be, because she's great.
She also touched your hand once.
She also touched my hand once. And anyone who touches my hand, I immediately want to be on in movies.
Hey, Lindelof touched my hand. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
It's a weird hand thing you guys
touch. Touch my hand and find out, Kyle.
It's a good proposition. even though he's really famous, David Tennant really is just only known for television and theater.
It's true.
Yeah.
Even when he was kind of really hot after, he rapped on Doctor Who, mm-hmm. he never really busted out as I don't know. He's kind of a household name. Definitely in the fandom.
He did was it Fright Night or something?
That's right.
Yeah. I actually really liked that movie.
Yeah. He was the vampire.
He played the
hunter.
Vampire hunter.
Yeah, with Anton Yelchin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's right. Colin Farrell.
But, he didn't really jump into a whole lot of movies, and it seems like his star is bright enough.
Yeah.
But that dude's a duck now, man. You got that duck dollar.
He's got that duck dollar.
He's going to be swimming around in it, literally, like Scrooge
McDuck.
Swimming
around in gold coins.
Okay, our next question comes to us from Michael Gastini, who says, okay, dudes, Game of Thrones Deadpool 2017. I'm liking it already. Who do you guys think has the worst chances of making it out of this season alive? My money is on Cersei.
I think Cersei sticks it out to the very end. I think she does. She's not going to survive, but I think she gets much closer.
With minor characters?
Yeah.
Melisandre, I think, is a goner.
I agree. I think Melisandre's going to die. I think the Onion Knight's going to kill her.
Yeah, I think he's going to go down there. He's going to see her, and he's going to be like, she's got to go.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to wonder about Varys.
I think, with this week's episode where he said, "You'll all, as long as I have my eyes, whatever."
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, he's gonna go blind." When you say a line like that, someone's gonna take your eyes.
He's gonna be watching Game of Thrones and masturbating so much he goes blind.
Is that what? I thought you get hairy palms, you don't go blind.
I thought you go blind.
There's only one way to experiment to find this out.
All right, we're gonna pause.
I don't want to play pause masturbation jingle for you.
I don't either. Don't do it. Why would you do that?
I'm gonna referee. No, the thing is, I feel like the person who's going to die, it's going to be a big character like Cersei, but it's not going to be Cersei. Yeah. So I'm going to go with either Tyrion or Jaime.
Oh, man.
That's crazy.
I don't think Tyrion. I think Tyrion is one of the three that stays alive. But I think Cersei's a pretty good.
Here's why I think Tyrion. At the end of last season, he made that big speech about how, well, I've never believed in anything. I've always been out for myself. But now I believe in you. Snap! That's when you kill him. Like the second, like a character's like, I have hope. Stab, stab. Yeah. Done.
Yeah. I mean, they probably need to keep a villain, though. They need Cersei there to remain a villain.
Well, they're going to have the White Walkers. I feel like the Game of the Throne is going to be resolved by the end of this miniseason.
Oh.
I really do. I feel like we're going to resolve who's on the Iron Throne, and then it's going to be all White Walkers versus dragons for the final season.
Hmm. Interesting. Our last question, guys, from Ross Brown. He asks, who would you cast as a gender-bent version of the TV dudes?
We covered this on the Patreon.
You sound like a cheapskate, Ross Brown.
No. We did address this on the Patreon, which I think is a great way to advertise. Hey, guys, if you want to go check us out over on patreon.com/TV dudes, you can listen to our episode where we talk about gender identity, and I think we talk about...
new Doctor Who.
Yeah, Doctor Who. We talk about fans feeling like they own properties and they get to kind of dictate things and how annoyed I am with some certain sects of fandom.
And I don't remember who we cast, quite honestly.
I believe I was what's her name from It's Always Sunny.
Oh, yeah. The waitress. You were
the waitress.
Yeah.
And then we picked Charlie Day for you for the male casting, too.
I mean, basically, I'm just both of them.
Look at that.
Yeah. It's right. Fine. That's great.
There's a little preview for you guys, so go check that out. And we're going to take a break.
You guys, so we're going to talk about all the comics news and stuff on the Patreon, but there were some TV adjacent things in San Diego.
Yeah.
Notably, a couple of big trailers. Stranger Things season 2 got that awesome trailer with Vincent Price and the Thriller.
Yeah. It was so awesome.
It was really good.
Okay, so I was in, not to brag, but I was in the Bahamas last week. I mean, there's no non-braggy way to say it.
Is that why your skin is so dark and glowing and golden?
I'm nice and toasty burnt.
He's like a little tiki doll.
Is that why you smell like coconut and rum?
Nope.
Not related? Unrelated.
No, that's as much.
I just smell like coconut and rum. But when I was down there, the internet sucked. So I watched it on my little iPhone in like clips, like 20-second increments. And it was so annoying. And I finally got home to watch it like in full.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it is awesome. Yeah, what a great trailer.
It's a great trailer. And I was already excited for this. But man, the Ghostbusters uniforms, the sort of flashes of seeing the upside down in our world.
Oh, yeah.
The Dragon's Lair reference, which is just a nice paying forward of what they did with D&D. Like, this is pretty awesome stuff.
I loved the slight glimpse of the Cloverfield monster deal. I was like, that's how you up the threat for season 2.
Yeah.
I like even the little tail end with Eleven showing up.
Yeah.
Because it's not like that's something that, like, is a big surprise.
Yeah,
everyone's anticipating her being back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like DC could learn a few things. I mean, come on. We know who's going to be in your movie.
I also was thinking, though, I'm like, those kids are starting to look a little older.
Yep.
You gotta film fast, guys.
Yep.
Get those episodes out.
Yep.
That's the problem. When you get like such a great cast of little kids, you got to keep cranking that out quick.
See, that's the genius. When they do Stranger Things 3, they just jump ahead 10 years and it's them as adults.
See, that's kind of great.
Yeah. You just jump ahead.
Stranger Things 3 in the 90s?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Ooh.
You know, Stephen King makes a lot of that kind of thing where it's like the kids and then the adults. And there's if nothing, nothing but Stephen King influence in Stranger Things. So
I could totally see that.
Yeah, I feel like it should go from from Stephen King influences then to Dean Koontz influences the third season.
If you go that route, I think you. Not the Dean Koontz route, but the no. Like I feel like if you go the route of like coming back as adults, yeah. No, it just totally derailed my thought. But no, you have to kill one of them. Like you totally have to like years later, and like you see the grown up them, but you can't really place who's who.
I feel like we could just have all of them living together, and we could call it New Girl. It'd be a delightful comedy.
Yeah, and one of them is telekinetic.
Yeah,
just like Jess,
the bee in apartment 11.
But instead, she just sings everything.
The other notable trailer, we got the new trailer for Defenders, which anything with a Sigourney Weaver like monologue is going to be better. So yeah. I was much, and the thing is, I'm still doubtful of their Iron Fist, but the way they all sort of interacted, especially anything with Jessica Jones. I was like, you know what? She's going to elevate this whole show.
I just felt like when we saw all these other trailers,
yeah.
We saw the Thor trailer,
yeah.
Which was fucking amazing.
Yep.
We saw the Stranger Things trailer.
Yep.
Even Justice League, I thought had some pretty great things going in it.
Sure.
And then I watched this trailer, and it feels so dull. The lines of dialogue, like a lot of the scenes, it didn't feel like it had the right marketing energy to give me a certain degree of confidence of where they want to go with this. That I don't know. I was overall just kind of meh about it.
Looks better to me than it did with the first trailer, but I'm still I don't know. They've let me down recently, so I'm a little worried about it.
I did from watching this trailer. I realized here is how you bring the Defenders into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Once the Avengers are attacked by a hallway, only the Defenders will be able to take down a hallway.
It's true.
It's like true. They're blowing bad guys up. Then this hallway shows up. It's like, oh no, we're here, guys. The Defenders got this. Get over here, hallway.
Perfect.
All right. Showtime has ordered a new show from Stephen Colbert. No. It is based on Donald Trump, and it is an animated show. It's an animated version of Trump and his family and his staff. And, guys, I don't know if I want to see this.
It doesn't sound good. And I'm thinking by the time they get it animated and they get it up, everything's going to be dated references.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be – I mean, this is – if there's ever a 24-hour news cycle of nonstop craziness, it's the Trump wagon. And
yeah.
Each week is so crazy that you can't even remember all the crazy shit that happened last week.
Yeah.
Here's why this show here's why it won't work. Because you're right. Either you go with the topical stuff and then your references are always dated, or you make it original storylines. And then at that point, you're just turning Trump into a, you know, a dopey cartoon character.
Exactly.
And kind of glorifying his
That's
status.
Where I'm at, too. Also, I just want to look at his – I don't want to look at his dumb fucking face.
Did you guys ever watch Little Bush? No. It was on Comedy Central for like half a season.
That's my Bush.
Was it where he was a little kid and it was animated?
No, that's different.
No, they had two of them. That's Bush, and they also had Little Bush.
And that's why Bush was not great.
Yeah.
I loved Little Bush, though. I thought that was hilarious. Because they had, like, Little Dick Cheney and, like, Little Congolese Rice.
I don't know. I don't like the idea of any of it.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. I don't want it.
And it just seems like a waste of Colbert's talents.
Yes.
And it seems like Showtime's trying to capture whatever Jon Stewart's initial deal with HBO is going to be.
Right. Which, that's the news I am excited about. Jon Stewart's first stand-up special in 21 years has been set at HBO. He's filming it. It's going to be airing. We don't know when exactly.
What does that guy's stand-up sound like anymore?
He's got
no
idea.
Different thing.
I have no idea.
Like,
is he going to sit behind a desk?
Yeah. Is he going to be standing wearing like a t-shirt and being all bearded like he is now?
I have no idea. I mean, I liked Jon Stewart when he was doing stand-up, you know, 30 years ago, whatever.
Sure.
He did a lot of pot humor stuff.
Yeah. I think he's going to be great. Huh? He does – his quote is, I'm really thrilled to be able to return to stand-up on HBO. They've always set the standard for great stand-up specials. Plus, I can finally use up the last of the Saddam Hussein jokes left over my first special. Which I feel like that's what we're going to get from John. We're going to get the sort of disappointed in you political stuff, the self-effacing humor, and probably some mockery of the pop culture landscape.
I mean, man, I just feel like if ever we needed that guy's voice back in the country, it's now. And the fact that he's been missing or does just the occasional like pop up on Colbert or whatever, it's disappointing. I need him.
If you're listening, John, here's the important thing. If this special sucks, all right, you need to pull a Harvey Dent and die the hero. Okay.
Whoa.
Because here's the thing.
That escalated fast.
I hate to get dark, but I mean, he's amazing now. So if he comes out with something and it's anything short of amazing, it's like, nah, man, go back to the farm. Like, don't go out on a low note. I mean, stay amazing.
You're kind of right. It is a legacy that's at stake in a way.
No pressure, John. No pressure.
If you're listening, John, we know you've got some money. Buttersculpture.com.
Buttersculpture.com.
It's the hot new thing. Okay. You should run that.
Patreon.com/EBD.
Learn more about butter sculpture at patreon.com.
Don't be crass, EBD. Grant. I'm trying to do something important here.
Find buttersculpture.com.
Buttersculpture is the future.
It's not. It's so not.
All right. By the way, if someone hasn't registered buttersculpture.com by this week, I'll be very disappointed.
Come, no one's gonna get
it's gonna happen. I bet it's already there.
You're gonna be
I bet somebody already has buttersculpture.com right now.
Give me a break. I'm gonna look it up.
Okay, you look it up. All right. Finally, we have a story about HBO's new show, Confederate. I don't know if you guys heard of this. People have some opinions about this.
There's a lot of fucked up stuff going on in the world right now. Yeah. And apparently this is at the top of some list.
So last Wednesday, about a week ago, HBO announced that their next show from David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the Game of Thrones showrunners, was going to be Confederate. It's a dystopian drama about a world in which the South won the Civil War and slavery still exists in modern day. And what I could tell from my Facebook page was that this was the worst crime ever committed by HBO against people, and also people were super overreacting to it. And it was – you were on one side or the other. Like, you either thought this was an abomination or you thought the people were making too much of a big deal out of it. And like – no, and I came down in the middle. Like, I thought people had a reasonable point of, yeah, maybe this is kind of third rail stuff to touch on. But I also thought, you know, this is probably like – I don't think it should be taboo to try and explore this.
There's a problem with the marketing department – wanting to give an elevator pitch of a high concept drama that will address certain things that are going to be rough or controversial, and how everyone's going to just react to the headline. And I think that is the culture we're in.
Yeah.
And this is a huge mistake on HBO's part to announce it in the way that they did, to be casual and cavalier about it. This is also on Benioff and Weiss because, you know, they gave their little video pitch with it. But, like, for them to not foresee that how they need to, if they want to do a show like this, how they need to address it needs to be with sensitivity and I don't want to say kids' gloves, but a certain degree of tact, I think. And they fucked up.
Here's my thing. You look at the guys who, you know, are working on Game of Thrones and you're thinking, all right, this Confederates show, is it going to have rape and boobies in it like their other show? Because I don't know if I want to see something of like a heavy nature like that, but then throw in the gratuitous sex in there and violence.
Here's the thing that I think is not being noticed is that the other two creators in the show are Nichelle Tremble Spellman and Malcolm Spellman, who are African-American and who have done – I'm going to look up and see what that was. But I looked at their credits and I was like – these guys have done some interesting stuff. And I wondered if Benioff and Weiss are attached more as the big names.
Overseeing consultants.
People showrunning it are the Spellmans. The Spellmans, by the way, Empire is the first thing I noticed on the record.
Yeah. I got the sense like they're helping a lot with sculpting the writing, but that this was an idea that Benioff and Weiss had been actually mulling over for a bit before those people were brought in.
Okay.
Can you imagine going to your black friends like, I have this idea about this Confederate show I think you should make?
And see, that's why
like,
I think.
Is that what happened? And that like, might have actually been what happened. Like,
that's why I don't think that's what happened, because I can't imagine that. I mean, I guess anything's possible, but that just seemed crazy to me that they would do that.
Do you think they'd say, are you just pitching this to us because we're black?
Exactly. Yes. I mean, there's no way that can't have been the way it happened, because I can't imagine them taking the job.
I don't know. It's also foot in the door at HBO doing an HBO monster budget show.
Sure, but they're working on Empire.
Empire is, yeah, that's serious money.
That's a big hit, and it probably makes more money than HBO.
Benioff. I mean, but for the writers, I never know. I never know.
I don't know either. Anyway.
And there's the prestige aspect.
HBO's head of programming, Casey Bloys, said, sort of talked about it and said that he said, this is weapons-grade material we're dealing with. Everybody understands there's a high degree of difficulty in getting this right. What excites them and us is if you can see if you can get it right, there's a real opportunity to advance the racial discussion. If you can draw a line between what we see in the country today with voter suppression, public education, healthcare, and our past, that's an important line to draw. It's a conversation worth having. It's very difficult. They acknowledge there's a high degree of difficulty. We support them. It's a risk worth taking. That's the heart of the question. Is this a risk worth taking?
That's my other the flip side of this is if there's a backlash to this, that is something that should have been known by the marketing department and they should have accounted for that and yep. They should have been able to tactfully craft their message or else it's a failure clearly on their part.
Right.
On the other hand, as I complained about in our recent Patreon episode,
yep.
I feel like there's this idea by fans, viewers, whatever, that they are owners in the early creative process of things.
Right.
And I do not like that idea. I think allow someone to create something, put it out there, and if you don't like it, then complain.
Yeah.
But this right to bitch about something before you've seen it, sight unseen, that really sticks in my craw as a creative person. I'm like, no, if you want to make a controversial art of some sort, if you want to make like, what was it? The famous Piss Christ or whatever it's called.
Right. Yeah.
You make that and then you accept the consequences from the audience based on what you made. But to prejudge what something someone's making based on another department, a marketing department's pitch, that's kind of, it's fucked up.
But
let them fail.
But I'm still allowed to say Young Sheldon's going to suck, right?
Yes, because we're all critics.
Okay, good.
You know, somebody posted a reaction video to trailer reaction videos, and it was like 12 trailer reaction videos for a trailer, and then the guy was like commentating on top of all their different reaction videos.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
it's out of hand.
Where we're at.
Pop will eat itself.
And Kyle and I are going to do a reaction.
Well, and that's the thing. So you do a trailer reaction video, but then you have the trailer breakdown video. All right? So the reaction video is just you going, what? No! And then the breakdown video is, so in this first frame, you know, we see he's wearing the suit. So we know the suit's going to be in the movie.
So in this scene, we see that Kyle saying what and then no about this other scene. But what you don't understand is that he also just spilled a bunch of queso on his lap.
So oh, no, where'd this queso come from?
We've deviated. Anyway, I'm curious to see what they can do with this show because it seems like such a high concept, tightrope walking pitch that – yes, of course there's going to be controversy. It's going to be something delicate that they need to address. And they've run into problems with how they've addressed certain other things in the past, sure. Like how they portray scenes with rape in them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they aren't the greatest at it.
Maybe not. And here's the other thing.
But they're also managing a monster show.
But we've seen, I mean, this has been brought up in many discussions, but Handmaid's Tale and the Amazon show, Man in the High Castle.
Yep.
Those are not shows that are glorifying a religious patriarchy or the Nazis winning World War II. These are exploring dark potential histories.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's going to say that that's pro-Nazi. No one's going to say that the Man in the High Castle is misogynist. That's not their point. Confederate lines in the same place with that. It's just that race is much more of a third rail than gender politics or even Nazis because it wasn't fresh. It's not as fresh.
At least in America.
At least in America.
Here's what you should have done. So you take a show like The Americans, which is about Russians. You make your show Confederate and you call it Yankees. People wouldn't have got all upset about a show called Yankees. It's like, what's
called
that
Damn
about?
Yankees.
Damn Yankees.
What if there was a show called Confederates that had a commentary show made off of that where it instead did an alternate reality where the Yankees won?
Ah. Interesting.
And it was called Reality.
And Trump is president.
No!
God damn it, Kyle.
Right, guys, the ghosts of the past.
Of the past.
That's what we're talking about.
Yes, ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts of the past.
So we're just talking about Ghostbusters this week.
Yes, just Ghostbusters.
We're gonna start with Insecure, and then we're going to hit Ozark before wrapping up, as usual, with Game of Thrones.
Yep.
First off, Insecure is back on HBO, and Randy, I saw you were particularly excited.
I love this show. I wish we had Ashley on, because Ashley loves this show on the same level I do. Do you guys like the show?
Oh yeah.
I'm okay. You cut back. You caught up, right?
So yeah, I fell off last season, but not because I didn't like it. Just, you know, other stuff came up, and then I got to catch up on the second half of last season before catching this new episode.
I'm all right with this show. I think it's okay, fun, but it's not a show I'm like super excited to watch.
I am super excited to watch it. I think part of it is that it's a voice we don't see on TV. Like, nobody else has the same voice that Issa Rae and Larry Wilmore bring to the show. I love Issa Rae. I think she does a great job of being sort of goofy and funny and cartoonish at times, but also very serious and very real. Like,
very,
I think,
vulnerable.
Her seeing her sort of try on different identities and still trying to figure herself out is really interesting. And I think that whether that's her or her friends or her boyfriend, and the way that they address being single and dating, but it's in a different way than, say, Master of None does it. And I thought that was really interesting. And I love her sort of fantasy world that she vanishes into from time to time. And you can't always tell when she's in it or not.
Yeah.
Like,
that played especially well this episode.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. When she had sex with her ex, I didn't know if that had happened.
Yeah. And the whole setup in the rest of the episode led to that for the audience. And you keep watching, you're like, is it going to break from it?
Like,
is it going to break
from
this?
And it did.
So,
and it's just,
when that scene came on, I knew instantly that was happening, because I have been in that situation before.
Oh, where you have like, Ray, you had sex with her?
What? No, but like, you had super nasty breakup, and it's like, I can never be with this person again. But then you have that moment where it's like, breakup sex.
Yeah.
And it usually lasts like 2 seconds.
Okay.
Same for me.
All right.
But I'm just saying.
No. Let's just pause.
let's get into it, guys. Kyle. No, I think this was a fantastic episode back. I love that they didn't shy away from sort of the ugliness of their breakup, and that they're really not okay. I also really like her friend being in therapy and sort of seeing her deal with her issues. Like, I think the character work here is really good. I also think it's super funny. And I think they do super awkward really well. So I am super into the show. Like I say, it's just a voice I don't see on TV a lot.
Super.
Super.
That sounds super. Kyle, what'd you think?
What? No, I liked it too. The thing that you were saying that really resonated with me is I love how it doesn't really shy away from situations. Like, I feel like things happen realistically how they would happen.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, last season definitely played with, like, what are the actual consequences of infidelity?
Right.
Like, it's just like a TV show to, you know, have the thing where, oh, your college crush comes back into the picture. And, you know, how does that magically change your life? But not in this show. It's like, no, that's how you fuck things up.
Yeah. Well, and she had gotten away with it. She had gotten away with it, more or less. And then the guilt sort of ate at her, and it just kind of came out.
See, this kind of – that plays into what I had a frustration with in the previous season. And that it's sort of this cliche that if a female character cheats, she has to feel guilty about it halfway through the season and then eventually come clean in the climax of the season.
Right.
Where it's like with guys, they cheat, they just kind of go on with it, and it's just that's the drama that us, the viewer, has to watch. That's usually how it plays, and it just felt like it felt a little tired to me to see that again in a show like this that otherwise – I agree, was doing a lot of interesting things with how it shows vulnerability, insecurity with the character, but you're also really rooting for her because she's cute and fun.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that it kind of went that route, and now
now that's going to be the dominant story for the rest of this.
It's fair.
Well, the part of like her journey or her struggle that I felt like I really resonated with and felt for her was the whole idea that when we first meet her boyfriend, like, the guy doesn't have his shit together.
Yeah.
He's eating cereal every scene where she's talking to
him. The right thing to do is get away from him. It looks that way.
And yeah, yeah,
looks
yeah.
Like she maybe fucked something up that was good.
Yeah, and then, but obviously he's working out like 4 times a day.
But, oh, yeah, there's that. But no, the scene where she sees the Best Buy shirt. And it's, yeah. Oh, no, you stuck with him through all that,
yeah.
And you waited till things got good, and then think yeah. You fucked it up,
yeah.
And now you have to live with that. You have to live with, not only did I fuck things up with my boyfriend, but I helped him get to this, like, better spot in life, and
yeah.
Now I'm not there to enjoy it.
Yep.
Yeah, I just felt like this show coming back, this first episode, felt a little light.
Huh, interesting, okay.
Like, not... Like, with the exception of that end scene, the stuff in therapy I felt could have been fleshed out a little bit more in the first episode or had a little bit more weight or gravitas. The scenes with the kids in the school felt a little bit mundane for a first episode back, a premiere.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of it just kind of felt like after the heaviness of the last episode, it's just kind of like... Everything's back to normal, and this is just like a slow episode.
Huh.
There's the lingering issues with her wanting to get Lawrence back.
Yeah.
But that felt like episode 2, 4, 6, not an episode 1 back.
Ooh, you know, I'd love it if we never see that character again. Not because I don't like
Lawrence?
The guy. Yeah, yeah. But I think it would just be like a very realistic way to handle it. To where, like, they've had this breakup sex, yeah. Now he's just out of the picture.
They're done, yeah.
And now yeah, it's, you know, guarantee being single stuff.
Back. Yeah.
Probably, but I think
he's the main actor, and he's
more realistic.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
I don't know. It wasn't, like, a huge complaint, because I still watched it, and I was like, I'm enjoying this.
Huh.
But it's, like, not a whole lot of it. Like, aside from, like, Issa Rae herself when she's, like... trying to hype herself up in the mirror, doing costume
yeah.
changes, stuff like that, yeah. which she did a lot last season too. Like, I find that particularly funny. There's a couple lines with some of her friends that are like, her quirky friends, like at the party that I thought was funny.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm like, this just straddles that line between comedy and drama so much that it's more, I'm just kind of like watching it passively.
Oh, man, I love that party scene where the guys just show up and start bringing out their dance moves, and they're trying to figure out how to get the gang bangers out of the house, and I loved all of that stuff.
I feel like maybe watching this sandwich between Ozark and Game of Thrones made me need more drama, I guess.
Yeah, like, it was a weird one to throw in the middle there.
Yeah, it just plays at such a comfortable, low-key level for me, in between ones that are cranking things up a lot more that
sure.
It just felt weird to me. It was a weird mix.
Okay.
Sometimes when I'm doing the beer show that I do, my beer podcast, we'll have one beer that like does something kind of crazy to your palate. And then going into that next beer, it's hard to like just go and start talking about it because my palate's affected by that last one.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that happens with shows, I guess, as well. It's like, I can't necessarily like fully gel with this one because I'm still reeling from that last one.
I respect how you're able to criticize Insecure and pitch your own podcast at the same time. I'm impressed. Very nice.
Off.
Very nice.
I was actually hit with this mode of inspiration.
I didn't say what it was, though.
What if we started talking about television like you guys talk about beer on that podcast? Like, you know, this show had some, you know, off-putting flavors.
Yeah. What's that aroma I'm getting from this? Desperation.
Hit the palate in a weird way.
Okay, Ozark.
Ozark.
So Jason Bateman is a
water bottle manufacturer.
He's a financial advisor / accountant who's great with numbers and quick on his feet thinking, and is apparently a money launderer.
Right, and his family's a big problem. His brother Job, his brother Buster,
right over his head.
His mother, who's just a terrible person.
Randy, we're a long way from the banana stand. Although we're still doing some of the same tricks.
So essentially, the pitch for this show is that he is a money launderer on the side, a la Walter White from Breaking Bad.
So
he's doing some shady business on the side that his family's not aware of. But then shit goes sideways with a mob boss and this seemingly mild-mannered guy, in order to save his ass, basically says that he's going to set up shop and do a new huge multi-million dollar money laundering operation down in the Ozarks.
Yep, in Missouri.
Well, and they want you to compare this character so much so to Walter White that they even refer to money laundering as cleaning, much in the same way they referred to meth as cooking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like when they, the first time he said
time
that,
to clean.
Yeah, it's time to clean. I'm like, you guys, we've heard this before.
This hit you guys more than it hit me, I think. I liked it, but I finished it. I went through the whole season, but I don't know that I need to see any more of it.
I watched that first episode, and I feel like I was riding such a high from that.
Yeah.
And I haven't finished this. I'm halfway through.
Right.
Or a little less than. But that first episode was so well written, so quick paced, and kept twisting and turning, and where I thought, like, generally a plot would go, it would kill a character.
Right.
Or twist sideways like this. I'm like, holy shit. Yeah,
right.
It was nonstop, and it kept revealing layers of all the characters one after another in such a smart way that I was just really impressed with it.
Yeah.
And it carried through fairly well in the second episode. Laura Linney is fantastic.
Laura Linney's really good. The thing that this really does well is the Bird family. Like the wife, the parent, the Laura Linney, Jason Bateman, and their two kids.
Feels a little like the Americans in a way. Yeah.
I think that they really, and that's one thing the Americans, we always give them credit for, have to cast these kids who can really hold up to it. I feel like the two kids are really good, especially the kid who plays their son.
Jonah.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
I feel like they did a really great job with the
Langmores?
Yeah, the redneck family.
Yeah.
Because when you're introduced to those characters, like, they're the villains. And for a moment, you're even kind of scared of them. And then once Jason Bateman's character approaches them and has, like, a no-we're-on-the-same-level type conversation,
right,
they just become supporting characters of the show. And you actually kind of like them towards the end of the season.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, the Langmores are kind of interesting, although they're kind of having their cake and eating it too with those characters, I feel, in a way that, like, they are they're dumb rednecks on occasion until they need them to also be really smart and cunning.
Yeah, three-dimensional.
And, yeah, I'm like, well, that line of dialogue felt weird coming out of that character based on how you've established them previously.
Right.
Uh-huh. But I guess it services what you need right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt a little bit like, a little weird.
At any point, did this seem kind of like a Orange is the New Black prequel where the sister, she just ends up making her way to the prison?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You guys are further along, so you know where it kind of goes and where it concludes.
Right.
But how it sets up the villains, how it introduces characters, like this cast of characters that all seem to have a good amount of depth, at least where I'm at in early stages of episode 5, how it drops a good cliffhanger at the end of episodes and pushes things along. There's parts where it's kind of a little slow or plodding, and I think whereas with Walter White, and you can't help but compare, but with Walter White, you have the sexy seediness of cooking meth versus a little bit more of the boring mundaneness of crunching numbers that he's doing. Well, but I still find it kind of fascinating. Wasn't there like a Ben Affleck movie called The Accountant that just came out where he's also kind of this type of guy?
Well, he was also a serial killer.
I didn't see it.
Because Bill Dubuque, the creator of the show, wrote The Accountant.
Oh, fun.
So it's a guy that has that expertise.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like the sexy part of this, like the thing that – because that's what Breaking Bad was all about. It was this idea of, oh, if I deal drugs, I'll have all this money and do all this. And every episode it's like, no, because then you have to deal with this and this, and you never enjoy having all the cash.
Right.
And that's kind of this. They have all these stacks of money, but they just can't do anything with it because it belongs to this person or because it's not clean money. For some reason or another, it's like a Twilight Zone episode where you have the thing you want, you just can't use it.
Yeah. Like,
this show, when it has certain elements, like where characters are coming into conflict, especially with Jason Bateman, and they have an argument that's maybe a little bit too clean and polished, because it'll come across as like he's really doing a great logical breakdown to them, which I'm fine with. Like, I've watched enough Aaron Sorkin that I can be okay with someone being a little bit too more clever than they ought to be.
Right, sure.
But, like, they'll say stuff that I'm just like, oh, shit, you really kind of nailed the point on that.
Yeah.
And he keeps skating by with, like, sound logic that's, like, the Langmores will give back the money they stole or whatever.
Right, right.
And then they showed in the beginning of this fifth episode that I was watching this preacher, which I'm sure you guys are a lot more familiar with.
Yeah.
Who also went into a situation and tried to preach logically to someone and was on the receiving end of a bullet as a result. I'm like, it doesn't always work out.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I kind of appreciated the parallel I was seeing there.
Real quick, without spoiling it, what about the scene with the preacher and the baby?
That was really good.
Did you like how they did that?
I did really like
it. It was pretty wild. Yeah. You want us to do a little spoiler on you?
No, we shouldn't spoil it.
Okay. We spoil it. Well, yeah, because you are getting into it kind of on that Breaking Bad level. So
this show's really gelling with me. Now, I'm still curious, though, Randy, like, what overall were you not liking?
You know, there's nothing I can put my finger on. I think it's so dour. You know how Breaking Bad would occasionally have that sort of light, that humor touch?
Mm-hmm.
This is so self-serious that it almost crosses into being too serious. And
farcical or something?
Almost. Like, it takes itself a little too seriously. And I feel like I compare, say, like the work that was done on Justified, which this also has things in common with, the sort of the criminal element of the Deep South.
You don't have the humorous swagger.
I miss the humor. I miss the swagger. I miss the larger than life aspect of it. There is some larger than life. There is some humor. The judge, or not the judge, the old man who lives underneath them.
Yeah.
He's obviously supposed to be the sort of the quirky character, but his situation is so tragic that he's hard to have fun with.
Yeah. And where I'm at, five episodes in, they still haven't done enough with him.
And they don't do a lot with him.
Yeah, he comes around towards the end of the season a little bit.
But I think in general, and I also think I love Jason Bateman. I think he's really good, but I do have a lot of trouble seeing him besides, you know, he's very much like his characters in other things.
Yeah, well, I think that's why he was cast in this.
Yes.
Because you want someone who comes across as a genuine, nice guy, lovable, so that you can kind of turn a blind eye to the fact that he's also a morally duplicitous scumbag who's able to do money laundering and fuck over other people like without batting an eye.
The thing that Jason Bateman does that I see is he does this consternation that people are not on board with whatever it is, whether it was Michael and Arrested Development or the movie he did with Mike Judge that was not very good.
Extract.
His whole sort of consternation that the world is not working the way it wants, he wants it to.
Mm.
And that is of a piece with what Walter White was doing. He was so frustrated with the world. But the way that Walter White lashed out at it and sort of turned it into burning anger was much more compelling to me than the way that Jason Bateman, who turns it into this cold, calculating, how can I use people? It's not as interesting to me.
Well,
there's less passion.
But there's an arc where you see that he feels like so overwhelmed that he's just going to give it all up, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I thought that showed a glimmer of like the human inside the kind of robot number crunching shell that I appreciated. And I like how that kind of all resolved itself once again with his logical robot brain kind of taking back over and being like, yes, but there's a good chance this won't properly process and I
right.
need to go back and just figure out another solution, choke it down.
Right.
And it's almost like this guy is like so emotionally detached because of that.
Right.
Well, I was going through the show and I started looking at him and really feeling this to me felt like a Lucifer story. Like he was the devil, and whether it was his family, his enemies, like anybody who encountered him was kind of given a choice. And depending on the choice they made, you know, their life either goes to shit or they live to, you know, fight another day. But things keep ending up badly if you, you know, follow this guy or you get involved with what he's involved in.
I mean, I haven't seen this flashback episode you guys are talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But it does seem like like he – a lot of the driving force of this show is contingent upon this guy being out of – being pushed into a corner, backed up against a wall, and right. out of options. Mm-hmm. And so out of desperation and quick thinking, he is able to kind of make aggressive, bold choices that one wouldn't normally make.
Well,
and that keeps working out in his favor.
That was a great story move. The whole like thing that ends them up in the Ozarks to begin with is just him kind of like begging for his life, like improvising on the spot. And then after, you know, the guy
– and the guy kind of knows it but still is like –
yeah. Oh, yeah, let's give it a shot.
You didn't really do anything wrong as much as that other yeah. guy did.
Yeah.
Let's give it a shot.
And that's where I feel like they did such a great job with this flashback episode, because a lot of times, you know, Breaking Bad did it. I mean, hell, Better Call Saul is a flashback episode, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, this idea that we're going to go back kind of for fun and see what happened. No, like when they do the flashback episode here, it's to explain how he got to that first episode. Like, yeah. because when we meet him, he's already involved in a criminal enterprise.
Yeah.
So getting to see, like, the beginning of that, I felt gave a lot of depth to this show. It kind of explained the whole affair subplot. Oh, we're definitely in spoiler territory now. it explained a lot of the other things that you're like, oh, this guy's kind of at fault, too.
Yeah.
Well, and there was something there's actually a line in the show. Like, I keep saying this devil thing. One of the characters says – well, there has to be a God because we know there's a devil. And he's looking just right at Jason Bateman.
I mean,
I don't think he's actually the devil.
Yeah.
Well, metaphorically.
Yes.
Metaphorically.
I like that idea, though.
Yeah.
So you're kind of eh about more seasons.
I liked it, but I don't know that I need to see any more.
And are you down for more?
Well, I'm on a TV podcast, so I have a feeling I'll be watching next season.
But you wouldn't care if you never watch again?
I think they're going to definitely have to do another season. Like, the ending was, you know, substantial, but they definitely leave it open for more.
This is interesting because based on where I am, I'm so, like, giddy about watching it, but, like, unable to find the time.
Huh.
Because I was in the Bahamas, guys.
Oh,
I didn't have time to watch this. I didn't get time to do my homework.
No good cell service, what? Is that why you've got that daiquiri in your hand?
I always have a daiquiri in my hand.
Oh, right. It's unrelated.
First time you've
unrelated.
Is that why that girl at the door was putting lays on us when we came into the studio today? Oh, that's why.
Is that why you have the coconut bra on?
That, yes.
Okay.
Is that why yes. I'm drinking good. Out of your coconut bra right now?
This is why I have that.
Okay. So why have you been wearing the coconut bra the previous 30 weeks?
In anticipation, I guess.
Okay. Support.
Hey, let's stop talking about my bra because that's why we do audio. And let's talk about Stormborn, episode 2, season 7 of Game of Thrones. I have some opinions on this, but I feel like I should let you guys start.
Guys, I'm so loving this season of Game of Thrones so far. I'm so in.
It's a very satisfying season.
Yeah.
It's like everything you want, they're like, oh, let's just scratch that itch.
Yep.
Let's scratch that itch.
Honestly, watching about 3/4 of the way through the episode, I was like waiting for the shoe to drop because I'm like, oh, everything's going well. Look how well everything's going for everybody. And yeah, it didn't. It doesn't go well for people.
No.
The whole first, like, I was like, oh, that sounds like a good plan. Oh yeah, that looks good. Oh, look at Jorah, and like it all looks like it's working out. Oh, she meets Hot Pie. Oh, she's going the right direction. She's got good information. It all seems like everything's going the right way. And then there was that last sequence.
Yeah, they tease us. They're like, oh, you're gonna get to see some boobies. We're going to do one of those Game of Thrones sexy scenes, and then it's like, nope, battle scene.
You know what's funny about that Grey Worm and Missandei?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sex scene?
Yeah.
They left the door open the whole time, and I kept thinking, close the door. Wait, close it. Do you need to close the door?
That's how they're, slaves
they're
do
both
it.
They're both slaves. They've everybody's seen it.
I guess. But no, most people haven't seen it as far as Grey Worm's Grey Worm.
That's true.
Or whatever's down there.
I just want to point out that we're talking about slaves having sex in this episode. The story earlier about them not being able to handle the
Confederate. Yeah.
I'm just saying, yep. Where people would get that idea.
Yeah. They're liberated now.
Yes. Okay, free yeah. slaves that are having sex.
Yeah.
Ish, she still has to do all the fighting and she still has to do all this bidding.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But they're for the cause.
So
they have a 401k now. So.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this episode. I love the stuff with Jon and Sansa. I love that she keeps calling him out. She's like, your brother and your father all did these stupid shit and they all got killed. And so when she tells him things like, don't go to this woman you don't even know. It's a stupid move. She's right. She's wrong, and we know she's wrong. But from the point of view of not knowing, she is right. Like, it's the dumb move.
She's completely right. And also, what was that shit when he goes, well, I'm going to leave and leave you in charge. And she's like, oh, okay, then fuck off then. Later, yeah. In peace. I don't give a shit anymore.
What I think we've learned is that John and Sans are both young, and they haven't learned the concept of having a fucking private conversation before you talk in front of all your people. Because this is twice, two episodes in a row, where she's undercut him, he's undercut her, and then he leaves her in charge. And it's like everybody's watching the levers of power, and that is not good in the Game of Thrones world.
Yeah, it was – I had a lot of problems this episode.
Did you?
And I'll just go ahead and say that now.
Get the problems out. Because we're just going to come at you and go, no.
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 I know, but
– No.
This episode was sloppily written, I felt like.
Oh, I disagree.
This is written by Brian Cogman. I don't know who that is.
He has been with the show since day one.
Okay. I felt like a lot of the dialogue was – and you guys are happy about it, but it felt fan service-y to me. And it felt awkwardly so in the fact that like – they suddenly sped up a lot of stuff at a clip and had Daenerys just running into every fucking person, like all like popping in her door. All of a sudden Varys is there and Melisandre's there at the same time, and they're suddenly getting a telegram the same week or same day or whatever from Crows up in Jon Snow. And like the timeline of like scale seems like this is Benioff and Weiss doing their thing versus George R. R. Martin, who thinks out how these time frame works. It feels sloppy to me, and it like everything just felt like, oh, hey, you're here. Here's my line of dialogue that I need to give so that I have a little bit of screen time before you tell me what we're going to do, Daenerys, or like, I'm sorry. Like there's this scene where these four women are talking around a table, yeah, with Daenerys, and that should have been like such a good empowering scene, but I watched the after credit scene where Benioff and Weiss talked about Daenerys and Yaris and
yeah,
and Lady Elena and Melisandre,
yeah,
all chatting around this table, and how they're like patting themselves on the back because they're like, look at us, we got four women talking to each other. That doesn't happen around a war room. And I'm like, but then you had Tyrion come in and call the shots to all of them.
But he wasn't calling the shots. He was acting in his role as Hand of the King.
Hey.
He was acting queen. For Hand of the Queen. He was acting for Daenerys. I thought that scene was all about Daenerys putting her foot down and saying, no, you Westerosi do not know how things are going to be done, and we're doing it the way I want to do it.
Okay, I'm good with that. But here's where I had also a problem. It felt like everyone was given a line by the script writer just so that they had something to say before Daenerys delivered what they're actually doing. It felt like it was theater for us, the viewer, unnecessary to the plot of the story. And well, they don't usually do that on the show.
We did get something really good out of that scene, and that was when Daenerys called Varys out.
Yeah,
for,
I love that scene.
It's like, you're really quick to turn on kings. Like, why the hell are you even sitting around the table
that was,
in the first place?
That was
and I
good.
Love when she basically forces him to admit that he's the one who hired the assassin. I thought her yeah. conversation with Varys, and I thought his response to her was really good. I really liked – where I don't know if Varys is – we've been set up to believe that Varys is sort of noble in his way, and I don't know if that's true or if he is saying what he wants her to hear. And I really liked that. I think here's the thing, Grant. I think – and this happens in movies too. If you disconnect from something early, you're going to be seeing the flaws in it throughout. And that's
I think
the
that's
first,
what happened
That's
to
the
here.
First scene, and if that puts you off, then you are seeing flaws. I was 100% in with that scene, and so I was in the whole episode.
I completely felt this way because when we get to the very end,
yeah,
like I liked a lot of the episode. I love all of the stuff that what's his name? Samwell. That Samwell's doing
yeah,
when
yeah,
he's
yeah.
going in and performing his own surgery.
That is my least favorite part of the episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's so gross what they do.
Oh, it's
but
gross.
I love how they it just feels like such a hero. I love how that was written. He
yeah.
just kind of comes in. He's like, I'm gonna be the one who saves the day. And then they're gratuitous, and I don't need that.
Yeah.
But I like the plot.
I guess for me, that's the part that I felt like, of course, that was going to happen. That was broadcast last episode when we saw Jorah. Like,
yeah.
We'd like, of course he was going to go into the Order. Of course he was going to help Jorah. Like, this is all – that all feels to me very pat, very like the thing I was expecting.
And yet, for some reason, how they wrote that felt a little bit more organic than the dialogue I got in other scenes.
You and I plugged into completely different parts of the show.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed the stuff with Jon and Sansa at the wall. And I love the two of them going – I don't think it's meant to be – I don't think it's sloppy writing. I think it's meant to be that neither of them is good at this job. Yeah. Neither of them have been groomed for this job.
I didn't mind that. I didn't like the dialogue between him and Littlefinger as much.
Oh, now, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought that scene had some tension to it, especially at the end.
It was a callback, of course, to like when Ned Stark choked Littlefinger out as well, like saying shit down there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, father and son kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of good.
Yep.
But I don't know.
There were a lot of callbacks in this episode to early stuff. The stuff with Arya and the wolf, that's a callback to like the first episode.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that until I watched the after show, and I'm like, oh, right, that is a reference back to
– she's a lone wolf, which made me think, is she still heading north?
No.
Do you think she's going to Cersei now?
Oh, no, she's heading north. She wasn't heading north. She was heading south. That's what I found really interesting. She talked to Hot Pie. Which I love seeing Hot Pie again.
Yeah.
She was heading south for Cersei. Hot Pie tells her about Jon, and then she
immediately
turns north. She changes to go, but you couldn't tell. I couldn't tell it was north.
Oh.
It didn't indicate.
I knew that she was heading north, and then she tells Nymeria. Well, because
it was soldiers heading in one direction, and you see her start to follow them.
I didn't know if we were meant to take away from that that she had heard this news, and so she was continuing on her mission, which was showing that she had broken with her family, or if she was going north because she was still, despite being who she was now, she's still Arya Stark.
I thought it was it was telegraphed as like a crisis of character, of conscience, that she was suddenly going, wait, I don't have to be this assassin. I still have family. I still have something that connects me to this world, and I don't have to be so disconnected. So obviously when she broke off her conversation with Hot Pie and was like, peace out, it was because she was going north, because suddenly she had that.
So you think when she ran into Nymeria, her wolf, that was her being reaffirming, oh, I need to go south and do my thing.
Yes.
That's like interesting. I hadn't read it that way, but that's interesting reading.
I didn't read it that way either.
Yeah, when she says, oh, whatever.
She says, that's not you.
That's not you. Is basically she's saying that's not you because you're just like me. We're kindred spirits.
Yeah.
And the fact that we don't need that family connection.
Yeah.
We need to carve our own path. And her own path is her destiny with vengeance.
Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't read it that way, but I think you're right.
Well, I think she's turning back to
South. Here's the thing, though. Yeah. I think if you paid close attention to those Vanity Fair photographs that they took at the beginning of the season, you'd see that she has the cat's paw dragonglass dagger, which Littlefinger had last time.
Oh, my God. You watched them behind
the scenes.
That they're
I'm telling you, I analyze this shit. No. In Vanity Fair, they do this like thing where you could see, oh, the Stark reunion or whatever. But no, I do think, like, based off of like some of the promotional stuff, I think she's going to end up in the north.
We'll see.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've also
haven't opened my mind to your theory, so I might be wrong.
It could be interesting if they want to go that way. That's fine. I did like that. I mean, I liked most of this episode. Yeah. It just felt like certain parts felt clumsier than their usual.
It's interesting. None of that level jumped out at me, and maybe it would on a rewatch. But I actually was I was very enjoying it. Randy is very enjoying. He's enjoying much.
My other bitch, I guess, about this episode is the pirate attack at the end.
What?
Bitch? What do you got to bitch about?
Here's what I got to bitch about. You have a fucking fleet of boats. How do you not see another fleet of boats sneaking up until they're
because there was their fog,
lesbian there sex was under decks. That's why
lesbian sex under decks and fog.
They're that's all your drinking.
Job. It should be like, oh shit, we're under attack. They'll be here in
five hours. They show them coming out of the fog,
and they also make a point to be like, these ships are new and like quiet and dark.
And yet, those ships could see where they were, but they couldn't see where the other ships
they're
were.
New ships.
What's this new ship? What, they have sonar?
Yes, they have sonar.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Then
Greyjoy Dar.
And then we get. It felt like the sand snakes all dying.
Yeah,
was the equivalent of. Oh, what's her name?
Nikki and Paolo, where no one liked him, so they just killed him off.
I do think that's true.
And they have the whip fight that she's trying to do. Yeah. And I'm like, what? Like, all of it just felt weird.
Their scene with Braun, though, I don't know if it was last season or the season before, where they're like stripping in the jail cell and they give him the poison. I loved that. I would have killed to just, you know,
because once meet again, up with Braun one more time.
Boobs.
This show does that every episode. Don't talk to me like I'm the only one.
Okay. I actually really enjoyed the I love how over the top we haven't seen a sea battle like this before.
True, I like him.
Wait a second. What about the battle in the bay?
Right, but that was different. That was them attacking land. We haven't seen ships versus ships to this extent. Okay, and I thought seeing that and seeing this what it also represents that like Danny's plan has been utterly fucked.
Yeah.
Well, no. So those ships didn't make up a majority of the fleet.
No, that was her fleet.
No. A majority of the fleet is still with her. That was just the stolen part of the fleet. So I think it's like 30% of her fleet.
Really? I did not read it that way. I thought
she just sent some of it over to Dorne.
I thought the fleet was going to Sunspear, and then she was like sending everybody else by – I thought they were going on land. I didn't think that – I thought that was the fleet.
We'll have to find out in the future. Because I read some stuff afterwards, like people talking about it online. So.
At any rate, it definitely fucks over the plane because they were supposed to be doing – it was supposed to be a pincer maneuver. There were supposed to be several things going on, and now one part of the plan has fallen apart. And also Yara and the Dornish people are in the hands of Cersei, about to be in the hands of Cersei, which means that they're probably going to lose the Dornish, which means she's lost an ally.
Best scene / acting in this episode was Theon with his PTSD. When I watched that scene of him seeing Yara with the knife to her neck and how he twitches and like just transforms back into Reek, I thought was brilliant. Alfie Allen, is that his name? That was amazing.
That was really good.
And his jump in there, like, was perfectly to be expected, especially from a more modern sympathetic audience like us than people unfamiliar in that world with PTSD. And I thought it was just really well done.
I saw someone mention this also, that it's technically the right move, because what is his best move? His best move is charging Euron, which probably ends with Euron slicing Yara's throat and killing Theon.
Yeah.
Like, this way they both live to see another day. Like, it wasn't a strategic maneuver, but it turns out probably to be the right move.
Yeah, he was probably right on doing that.
But that wasn't why he was doing it. It wasn't what he was thinking.
No, he was freaking the fuck out.
Also, by the way, if you have not gone to BuzzFeed and see the What Euron Greyjoy Looks Like article, do yourself a favor.
Because he looks so trashy.
It's like 50 lines of what a douche bro Euron Greyjoy is. It's amazing.
I love his B.A. Baracus sideburns and the mustache thing he's got going on.
If I don't know if they have Axe body spray in Westeros, but if they do, Euron Greyjoy wears it.
I got fucked ton. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I'm a little off with you guys on how I felt about this overall. But also, I don't feel like a ballista is going to beat a dragon. I don't know.
I would have liked that to have been a little more spectacular as well. Yeah.
I wanted when Cersei's all like, we got other plans as well. My maester's working on it. And we've seen a maester resurrect basically into like a zombie mountain.
Right.
Zombie mountain.
Yeah.
I wanted him to make zombie dragons or some
Jesus
shit.
Christ.
That's what I was waiting for.
I would not have been happy with that.
And instead, it's... Hey, we can shoot a pretty fucking big arrow. Yeah.
Well, apparently there's a version of the dragons, like a white version, Walker dragons, and they have ice breath instead of fire breath.
Where have you heard this?
What?
Where have you heard this?
Again, on the internet.
I think that's bullshit. There's a white dragon in D&D. I think that's what they're talking about.
No, I read this on actual words in actual internets.
I don't believe this.
We haven't seen any evidence, I think, in this world yet. But
was this?
It's definitely from the books. It's not from the show.
Was this on buttersculpture.com?
What? Yes. If you go to buttersculpture.com, you can read all about this.
It's TV Dudes episodes and Game of Thrones spoilers.
Yep.
Anyway, Melisandre's dead as soon as Onion Knight gets down there.
Yep.
He's just gonna be like, what?
I find it interesting that the red priests are. They've been presented as sort of dangerous fanatics and bad guys, but really she is on the side of right. Like the Lord of Light is definitely counterintuitive to the White Walkers. I mean, that's important that they're on the right side, but their methods are so horrible.
Well, it's that she gives certainty to very uncertain prophecy.
Yeah, yeah.
And she reads everything incorrectly each time and goes, well, I thought it was this person. Now I think it's this person. I think it's this. And
yeah, she's kind of out for herself.
She's kind of like,
she's
well,
an opportunist.
She's like, well, what's the worst going to happen? I burn the wrong person. I've done that before.
Yeah. I mean, I hope she's gone, but I like I that know. Choice.
When you saw how old she actually was, if they haven't killed her by now, there's probably not a exactly. chance it's happening this season.
Exactly.
Time will get her eventually, I think.
Time will get her.
all right, guys. Well, we'll be back next week to talk about The Queen's Justice. That's the name of the next episode.
Ooh.
A little bit of a preview for you folks.
She's going to be putting a hurting down on them.
And we're going to wrap things up there. Randy, Kyle, thank you guys.
Grant.
Thank
you. Listeners, thank you. Our newest patrons, Jonathan Haftemichael and Justin Rainey.
Big
thanks.
Thank
you guys so much.
Yeah.
And we're going to go ahead and stop this episode for the week, but we're going to go and do a little Patreon mini. So if you guys are patrons, check that out. I'm pimping Patreon way too much this episode.
That's good.
Patreon.com/TV Dudes.
We got to keep the lights on. Buttersculpture.com for TV Dudes. That's episodes streaming exclusively alongside Game of Thrones spoilers read aloud by Kyle.
Oh,
yes. Check it out on the Butter Sculpture app. Only for Android, not iPhone yet.
Yeah, no, we haven't approval about the iPhone store yet. It's coming.
We're on the iPad, just not the iPhone.
Yeah, we're on the iPad, but not the iPad Air, the original iPad 1.
Yeah.
Really behind in the technology, guys.
Buttersculpture.com.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.